Hi, I'm Chad Phillips, co-founder of High Point Brewing Company, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. The startup story would not be possible if it wasn't for the support of our sponsor, MoboCash. Move money like a miracle with MoboCash, the free money app that kicks cash. Download MoboCash app on iTunes or Google Play today, and you'll get your slick new Mobo card in the mail. You are no longer dependent upon digital currency alone, but you'll have a card that allows you to purchase at POS stations, restaurants, buy online, anywhere that you want to use your money. No credit check, no credit impact, quick direct deposit, FDIC insured, and free to register and activate. Support our sponsor, MoboCash. Visit movo.cash or thestartupstory.co/movocash. Before we jump into our episode this week, I want to share a review that was posted on iTunes by Nicole Rowe, who gave The Startup Story a 5-star rating and wrote, "Such an inspiring podcast, so easy to relate to and inspires so many to go after their dreams." I love this feedback, Nicole, and thank you for leaving this review. One of the many reasons I created The Startup Story was because after years of sitting with founders and running numerous live events with founders, I saw a commonality in all of them, regardless of their industry. Yet when we got real with each other, the commonality became much more apparent. That is why you find these episodes so easy to relate to, because all entrepreneurs have so much in common with each other. The Startup Story wants to strip down all the vanity that is built around entrepreneurship so that all who are considering starting their own business are fully informed on what to expect, as well as to let them know how they're not alone in their struggle. All of this is to help inspire you and all of our listeners to keep moving forward. So for all of you that are listening right now, if you have found any value in any of the Startup Story episodes, please leave a review. I'll continue to read one each week, so plug your brand in the review as well. Giving your business a plug is the least I can do if you take the time out of your day to write a review. Now let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is Chad Phillips, co-founder of High Point Brewing Company in San Dimas, California. This episode combines a few things that I love dearly. First, small business. I love small business. The large global companies are the brands that become household names, but it's the small businesses across the country that provide for all of the households. It is the small businesses in our cities that contribute the greatest economic impact to our country. It is the small businesses that move the needle on the unemployment rate of our communities. I absolutely love small businesses. The second thing about this episode that I love is that it speaks about creativity. I really wish I was creative like these artisans like Monkwood Studios that we had, or even Chad Phillips and beer making. And I'm sure most of you don't consider beer making creative, but in this episode, our featured founder, Chad, will discuss just how personal beer making is to him and how his beers are a personal expression of his creativity. In listening to Chad's startup story, you'll hear how important it is to maintain long-term focus, even if it means you're staring at an immediate health issue. You'll learn how critical it is to develop a thick skin when creating a product that is susceptible to public opinion. And you'll hear a very tactical conversation, in fact, more so than most Startup Story episodes, as we walk through the launching of a brewery. Like I mentioned earlier, the Startup Story is relatable because there's so much commonality in the entrepreneurial journey. And one of those areas of commonality is the influence of our family. Every single founder we have had on the Startup Story has someone in their family that they point to during their childhood that was their entrepreneurial influence at a very young age.
My grandpa was the entrepreneur. So my grandpa started a family business when he was in his 20s, started a machine shop in the same city that I own the brewery.
And what city is that again?
San Dimas.
San Dimas, got it. Okay.
So that's where that comes from. My dad's now running that. So he gets some of that business sense from that. But in my childhood, he was just working for my grandpa. My grandpa's definitely the one that started that business.
What about your mom?
My mom's a teacher.
Teacher, okay. Yeah. So your mom's a teacher. So obviously there's that stability mindset that comes with being a teacher. Mm-hmm. Your grandfather was really the risk taker, the machine shop owner.
Yeah.
Blue collar, hard worker. What industry was he tooling things in?
Mostly medical dental.
Medical and dental, okay. And your dad was working in that business as well. Any siblings?
Two siblings, two younger sisters.
So you're the oldest.
Yeah.
And the only boy.
Yeah.
Was there a difference in the way your parents raised you versus them?
Yeah. It's hard to pick out what those things are, but yeah. I would definitely say that there were. I think there were more expectations for me.
As the oldest or as the oldest and male?
Both.
Both.
Definitely both, yeah.
What were those expectations? If you were to think back now, what were some of those expectations?
It was always what I was getting pushed to do. So I went into engineering. That was my first field. Okay. And I kind of was pushed into that. I loved engineering.
Yeah.
But that was definitely what I was encouraged to do.
Okay.
Both my sisters are teachers and my mom's a teacher. So it just kind of fit naturally that yeah. way. But for me, I didn't really have a path.
Okay.
I think they knew my mom was a teacher. They wanted to be teachers. It was kind of an easy fit.
What did you said push, but what did you want to do? Again, junior and senior year, those college and career days, you're now thinking maybe SAT, ACTs, go to college. What was in your mindset towards the end of high school? What did you want to do?
Oh, I wanted to be an engineer. It fit. Okay. It fit so perfectly. I was always taking things apart, putting them back together. Push might have been the wrong word because it was definitely very natural.
Okay.
I found it fit me right. I knew freshman year that I wanted to be an engineer.
Oh, okay.
And so it wasn't that they pushed me towards it, but they definitely helped guide me yeah. in that direction and show me what I needed and kind of give me the tools of that's what you want to do. You're in the garage, you're taking apart VCRs and pulling out the motors and making little RC cars out of them. So
what I love most is we have listeners right now that don't know what VCRs are.
Yeah. That's true.
I love that about technology, how fast great, things yeah. go. I had another Zach Swire a couple episodes ago. His brother had 5 locations and it was a pager sales business. I love that there are people that have no idea what pagers are. So you knew you want to be an engineer as a freshman. What type of engineer were you thinking at the time? Or better yet, as a 15-year-old, what was engineering to you?
I always wanted to be a mechanical engineer okay. at that point. I knew, but in my head, I was going to go work for BMW.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to do. I was going to work for BMW, build cars for BMW. I don't know why. No one yeah. in our family had BMWs. That was just something that got stuck in my head and what I wanted to go do. So literally 9th grade, I'm going to go be a BMW engineer and I'm going to design the new BMWs.
That's awesome.
And that's where I was at.
That's awesome. So what was your first step out of high school?
I went to Cal Poly Pomona mechanical engineering program.
Okay. And throughout that entire time in Cal Poly, was there any inkling whatsoever of entrepreneurship? Because again, you're talking about employment as right. an engineer, right?
Right,
so
right?
That is a mindset, not necessarily a punch in, punch out mindset, but a stability mindset. It's I know I do this, I get a paycheck, there's no risk.
Yeah.
Was there any inkling in college for entrepreneurship at that time?
It always interested me.
What was it about it?
Interesting. So I always just had different ideas about businesses. I think the thought of being your own boss is always nice. Doing something in that is very different, but obviously watching my grandpa do what he did with yeah. the machine shop, it was something I thought about, definitely. Could I invent something fun?
Okay.
And that was kind of what it was. If I invented something fun, could I turn it into a business?
Were there any failed attempts in college to try and create something and sell it?
No. I never got that far.
Never got that far? You just yeah. had a bunch of ideas.
Yeah, no. Okay. College kept me way too busy.
So after you graduate college, your first step was within what then?
I started my internship with an engineering company.
Okay.
Oh, it was sophomore year of college.
Okay.
And so I was working throughout college. When I graduated, I was actually managing the company by the time I graduated.
The engineering shop that you
the place engineering, you yeah.
Wow.
So okay. I was their youngest manager. It was very weird. It was weird to graduate and kind of be in the upper part of my company because I wasn't looking for a job. I yeah. wasn't. There was really nowhere for me to go. I didn't know if I was going to leave that place and try and go somewhere else. But at that time, there really wasn't anywhere further for me to go. So,
did you finish college in 4 years?
No.
How many years did it take?
7.
7 years.
Yeah.
So were you doing it part-time or was there some life happenings that took place that delayed it? Or why 7 years?
Life happenings.
And the reason I asked that question is because previously, assuming it was 4 years, mm-hmm. like, wow, you really got to management fast.
Right.
7 years, a little bit more understandable, but you had graduated college while you were a manager. So what happened in those 7 years? Why it took 7 years, and how did you climb the ranks still so fast without a degree?
So Cal Poly was really impacted. Their engineering program I think a regular degree there is like 175 units. Engineering is like 220 units.
Oh, wow.
So they call it a four-year program. It's really not. It's pretty uncommon for people to graduate engineering at Cal Poly in four years. To do it, you have to take like summer school, and I travel a lot, so I wasn't taking summer school very often. Couldn't get the classes I needed, working full time, and I didn't have a reason to rush having this job already. So I kind of took my time. So that life happenings, all sorts of things.
How did you climb so fast in that? What was the name of that company?
Hyrel Connectors.
How did you climb so fast prior to completing your degree?
It was a combination of the first part of the company was really old. People were retiring, made for a lot of openings. And then there were a lot of big contracts that came up. So I just worked really hard on those contracts, got us some of those bigger contracts. And that put me in a place long term to kind of have more say in the company.
Were you there up until the time you started your brewery?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you loved it. You were probably there, if I'm doing the math right, 12 years?
Yeah, that's about right.
About 12 years. So you were there for 12 years, so you must have enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get from a comfortable income, a stable life, a job that you love, exercising a skill that you've wanted since you were a freshman, how do you get from there to, I think I want to start a brewery?
For me, it was really... I started getting really bad migraines. I had some medical issues going on, and I was taking a lot of time off for those issues. I would get a migraine, I would call in sick, and I really couldn't do my job as well as I wanted to anymore.
And what year was this when these migraines started coming?
This was 2013.
So 6 years ago. Yeah. So about the 7 or 8 year mark of employment with Hyrel Connectors. Okay. So you were there for 8 years, migraines started occurring, continue.
Yeah. So that was the time where I really started thinking doctors were talking about permanent disability, and I was 28 at the time. Yeah, 28. And I didn't want to go on permanent disability at 28. So it was, what can I do to be my own boss? How can I make a future for myself and not just collect a paycheck for doing nothing?
So at 28, you were having migraines either so frequently or so intense that a doctor was thinking permanent disability?
Still do.
You still get the migraines?
Yeah.
Wow. And you didn't have them your entire life?
No, never went to the doctors. I didn't even have a doctor when this started happening because I didn't go to the doctors.
Yeah.
Now I have doctor's appointments, you know, weekly almost. So.
Associated with the migraines?
Yeah. All to do with the migraines.
Wow. Any idea what brought this on at 28?
There's still, they think it's something spinal, but there's just a bunch of different opinions, but
Yeah, and that's what most medicine is, just opinions.
Yeah, yeah.
So for all the doctors listening, I'm sorry, but I'm not. So really it was your health and well-being that started thinking like, well, maybe I want to have a little bit more freedom.
Exactly that.
Oh, that's incredible. I do not hear that story very often.
Yeah.
So 28, migraines start becoming more and more intense and more frequent. You start thinking, maybe I want to start doing my own thing. Walk us through that process, because I can't believe the first thing you thought was, I'm going to open up a brewery. So when you start having the thought of entrepreneurship, what are some of the things going through your mind as opportunities?
A brewery definitely wasn't my first thought. it was... What can I do? What tools do I have? What skill sets do I have where I could go be my own boss?
Yeah.
Again, family still owns the machine shop. So it was, do I want to go work at the family business? Do I want to work for the machine shop?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do? The family business, I don't want to go there and be the one who's the son running the business by calling off sick once a week.
Mm.
That just didn't seem right to me. So I try to look at what tools I have, what skills I have. And I love brewing. I had a ton of hobbies. Breweries are very popular. And it was just one of those things where my partner, Dominic, he was a friend at the time, and he wanted to open a brewery. I brewed at the house I was at on and off, and we just started talking about it, and it was just something that kind of clicked and fit. It fits the times. It fits what I want to do if I'm not there one day a week.
So at 28, 29 is when you had this idea for a brewery.
Closer to 30.
Closer to 30.
Yeah, I started getting the migraines, and I kind of battled that for 2 years. I battled what I wanted to do. It was kind of an on-off thing. So it took about 2 years for me to really like pull the trigger on this.
But Obviously, one does not consider opening a brewery unless there's extensive knowledge in beer making. Mm-hmm. So how many years have you been making beer up until that moment where you decide, let's open a brewery?
About 8 years.
Yeah. So this started in college.
Yeah, I started.
And that didn't contribute to why it took 7 years.
Not at all.
So let's talk. Let's obviously, because that plays a critical part. Because again, a successful brewery has great beer. Mm-hmm. Obviously, great atmosphere. A lot of things that contribute to a brewery being great. But a person doesn't jump into the idea of wanting to open up a brewery unless they have knowledge of beer making. So let's go back to the very first time you started thinking about making homebrew. Mm-hmm. How old were you? And what was that? You just saw the back of a Guns N' Ammo ad, a homebrew kit? What?
I had a family friend who I've had a ton of hobbies, but I was welding at the time. Okay. And a friend of mine's dad was like, hey, if you want to make beer, you weld this stand, you attach a burner. I'm in engineering school, so that all sounded fun. He goes, you get one keg, you cut the top of a keg, you make your own beer. 21, college, that sounds awesome. And it kind of spiraled from there. Then he told me if I got 3 kegs that I could do all grain brewing, which is like what you should do. So then I got 3 kegs, welded this big tower stand in the backyard, and it was really more my passion for welding and building things that led me to build this whole brewing setup when I was like 21. And I started brewing from there.
That is hilarious. So your love for welding is what drove the idea of what you could make and then started home brewing. But what about the education side of brewing? I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. And so now you're enjoying the welding process of making these towers, and you mm-hmm. have something in your backyard because it's larger than would fit. And I think a lot of people, I hear these stories, people making homebrew in their bathtub or something like that. Yeah. You know, obviously you have a much more advanced setup than that. Where did the education and knowledge come from on how to make beer?
I started reading. I mean, everything I did was self-taught. This guy kind of gave me the basics by this book. There's a couple good books out. And so I started reading books, and it was more just hands-on too.
Okay.
You know, the first 2-3 batches I did didn't taste very great. Started trying to read why, figure out why, and experiment and go from there. And they just started getting a little better. Every time they get a little bit better. I started dialing in different recipes I liked, different techniques I liked.
How long until you had a batch that was palatable?
Probably my third-fourth batch.
Third-fourth batch?
Yeah.
Has that recipe made it to the brewery?
No.
No? Would it make it there? Now that I've put the idea in your mind, might there be an OG on tap somewhere?
It could. It was an IPA. It was a pretty basic IPA. So I would say we have some sort of version of that. Something pretty close.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So making homebrews for some years. But again, just because you make it at home, there's a huge gap between just making it home, I'm assuming probably giving them as gifts, mm-hmm. your friends tasting them at parties, you bring them for people to sample, before it starts becoming something you really want to put out in the public. Mm-hmm. I assume the first time the public tasted your beer was not when you opened the brewery.
No.
From all those years of making your own beer, what were you doing to test the public reception to it before you committed to opening up a brewery?
So it was mostly friends and family. So when you're making beer, the most common size is 5-gallon batches for a home brewer. So 5-gallon batches, you're not going to drink 5-gallon batches to yourself.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, that's true. And again, being in college, it's pretty easy to get rid of beer.
Yeah, so, that is true.
Friends, family. I was giving away beer as fast as I could.
Yeah.
And people really like getting free beer. So even if it's not the best, it's free.
Yeah, that is, yes. So now you decide you want to open up a brewery. Mm. What goes through your mind as you're processing? Because again, you didn't pick an e-commerce company. You didn't pick something that had low risk. There's a lot of capital to put any type of brick and mortar business in play, let alone all the equipment you had to install in order to make a brewery happen. Mm-hmm. You're not just a distribution place where someone else is making the beer. This is your beer that you're making. There's a lot of thought that has to go into, do I really want to do this? Do I not want to do this? What was that process for you? And at any point in time, was there any doubt that this was going to happen for you?
Oh, there's always doubt. There's still doubt. It's tough. You're giving something to somebody, you're giving them a product, and there's going to be people that judge it. And there's going to be people that'll love it. There's going to be people that'll hate it. And that's always definitely tough for me to see somebody telling me they don't like what I made. It hurts.
Yeah.
And I haven't really developed that skin because in engineering, I delivered you a product. The product was tested. It works. You know, it was right or wrong.
Yeah.
And now with beer, it's not right or wrong. It's a personal opinion to different people. And so that's still kind of tough. So there's definitely doubt. There's doubt in, is it good enough? There's doubt in the business. Yeah. Is the business going to go anywhere? So the doubt's there. But I think part of the doubt is it drives me. And I think that's important for business too, is letting the doubt be something that keeps pushing you to be better.
Yeah. Yeah, letting that doubt be a catalyst.
Yeah.
Right. For whether it be product improvement or distribution, whatever the case may be, letting that doubt be a fuel for something else.
Right. Yeah. I don't ever want to get comfortable, you know?
Yeah. So you and Dominic say, let's open up a brewery. What are some of the first steps that, some of the first wheels you put in motion to make that vision happen?
For a brewery, for us, it was, size, capital, business plan. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of givens. But the key for us was location. And so we wanted to open in Lake Arrowhead, little mountain town. There's nothing around up there. It seemed fun, kind of get away from city life. And
yeah.
Brewery in a mountain town.
Just, all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds. I love my motorcycle, so I could do the two things I want. I could go in the morning, brew beer, and then ride my motorcycle out of there, go on a couple trails. And we looked up there for a while, and we're just striking out. And so we started looking kind of.
Striking out on trying to find a space that would work.
Yeah, a location that would work. Yeah, so it's small. There just weren't a lot of options.
Yeah.
And we were maybe impatient. I don't know. We looked for probably 4 or 5 months there, but we wanted to get a place open and we had kind of seen the entire area. There's nothing left to look for. So we started looking everywhere around where we lived and found San Dimas. We're next door to where my grandpa opened his machine shop, which is just completely coincidental, but perfect.
Like the physical location is next door to where your grandfather opened up his shop.
The complexes are the next complex. Door.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
So not like this door to door, but the complexes are next door. Yeah.
You said your dad was now running that business, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be a bit of nostalgia, just the idea that you started a business because your grandfather was your entrepreneur guide, if you will. Like he was the entrepreneur in the family. You watched him. So there's got to be a bit of nostalgia knowing that, oh, now I'm paving my path relatively close to where my grandfather paved his. That's pretty cool.
It's fun. Yeah, I like it.
That is
I
pretty
like
cool. A lot. So you find a place in San Dimas. What about that location? Because not being a brewery owner, I have to believe the location is huge, like it is for restaurants as well.
Right.
I mean, you know, I was just took my son to The Habit and it's at a location I never think of because it's not in a busy center. Mm-hmm. So for a brewery, what were some of the key considerations for you?
So the city plays a big part for us when we were looking. We didn't want to open in the city that already had 4 or 5 breweries. Got a couple of the cities surrounding us already have a lot. We don't want to crowd in on other people's places. We definitely wanted that demand. So being the first one in San Dimas was a big thing for us. It's really close to their downtown. It's really close to their kind of restaurant center. And we're front facing on a major street, which was also a big appeal to us. Yeah. A lot of breweries get tucked back into industrial complexes. So having big windows that face the street, mm-hmm. I love that. As soon as I saw that, I was like, this is nice. We can draw people in that way. So it was perfect when we found it.
Okay. So you find the location. You're a welder. Do you make your own equipment? Do you buy your own equipment? What was some of that thought process?
I bought it. I was a hobby welder and stainless is a lot harder to weld.
Okay.
We knew we wanted to go with equipment that was made in the US. There's a lot of Chinese equipment out there, but quality was definitely a big factor for us. Something that would last. Used brewing equipment right now goes for like 90 cents on the dollar.
Okay.
So it didn't make a lot of sense for us to go used. So we went new.
Okay.
But the engineering side, I definitely did everything I could to hook up the chilling system, lay everything out. I mean, everything else I did that I could. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than manufacture the actual tanks themselves. Okay. Awesome. How long was the process from commitment to opening a brewery to opening the doors?
18 months.
18 months.
Yeah, right around there.
That time you were working full time? This is all a side gig?
No, actually for me, I had quit my job and went back to school and got a second degree.
A second degree in what?
Business leadership from APU.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you were going to be running a business?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to do that. And like I said, the migraines, I knew that I couldn't work the job I was at anymore. And so I wanted to really focus on opening the brewery.
So did you quit your engineering gig at the same time as you were thinking, I'm getting these migraines, I can't be here anymore, I want to open a brewery, and you just quit?
It wasn't opening a brewery at the time, but it was knowing that I was going to do something different.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you went and got that business degree from AP.
So I didn't want to sit around. Yeah. Okay. I took a part-time job at a little local liquor store. They're like a BevMo size, okay, but a local shop called Liquorama. They were super nice. They taught me distribution.
Was that an intentional job that you got, or did it just happen? I mean, did the stars align and it just happened?
No, I took that once I started talking about opening the brewery. Okay. So once I decided that a brewery was the direction I was going, I had a friend that worked there. They offered me the position. They were looking for part-time work, and it just kind of made sense. So
okay,
it was definitely just a fun way to kill time.
So what were some of the considerations? Now let's talk a little bit about the business of a brewery. Mm-hmm. Again, you're my first brewery founder on the Startup Story. I love beer. So mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a lot of questions that I probably wouldn't ask from a lot of other founders, but I'm just fascinated with this business that you have. And I've had your beer, and it's incredible. What are some of the considerations when opening up a brewery? I mean, as an outsider, I think beer quality, the variety. What other things am I missing?
Our first consideration was the size. How much capacity do you want to go with? Do you want a 7-barrel system? Do you want a 100-barrel system?
And does that determine how much variety you can have at one given time because of having to clean the tanks and everything? Or
not really. The nice part about beer is it takes basically the same amount of time to make 1,000 gallons as it takes to make 5 gallons.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But definitely it's a consideration of your capital, where that comes into play. The style of beer, I never really thought about, honestly.
Okay.
I mean, there's places that specialize in Belgian beers. There's people that specialize in East Coast styles. Mm-hmm. I make beer that I like. it tends to have a very West Coast feel,
yeah.
But that's just the beer that I like anyways. So I would say that we definitely have a West Coast influence.
Okay.
But I'm also born and raised here.
Yeah. What does that mean from a beer perspective, a West Coast influence?
So West Coast beers tend to be a little higher in alcohol, a little bit hoppier. If you were to say, compare maybe in big beer, like a Sam Adams to a Sierra Nevada.
Okay.
Sam Adams would be more of an East Coast style, where Sierra Nevada would be a West Coast style.
Okay. That's a great comparison.
Yeah.
Excellent. So you opened the doors, how many months ago?
6.5.
Opened the doors 6.5 months ago. What was your first month like?
Chaos.
How so?
There's so many unknowns. Are people going to come in the door today? Do we do a soft opening? Do we do a grand opening? I've never opened a business. Yeah. So everything's a guessing game. What should our hours be? What are our recipes good? Beers take 2 months at least to make. So I think we opened with 8 beers. We didn't want to open with 4, but we wanted to open the doors as soon as possible. So at what point do we open the doors, have enough beers to serve? Are the beers good enough? How are people going to respond to them?
So let's answer all those questions. What did you go with, and then what adjustments did you make from that first month of learning?
So we tried to cover a pretty broad range. So a couple light beers, couple middle of the road beers, couple dark beers, something to please, you know, you're never going to please everyone, but cover a good spectrum there. And then the hours were something we talked about. We're open 4 to 7 during the week and 12 to 7 on weekends. So,
wait, you're open 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. during the week?
Sorry, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I was like, 3 hours. No, wow.
We close at 7 on Sundays.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But we didn't know if those hours were going to be right. And they kind of felt natural. People would start to roll in about 4, leave about 10. And so we're like, okay, we got the hours right. People are liking the beer, keeping the place clean, just seeing what people wanted. We didn't have really any entertainment at the time besides music. We didn't have any food.
Yeah.
So we slowly brought those things in, but it was always just, what can we add? How do we keep people in here? What do people want? They seem to receive the beer well, but on top of the beer, TVs. We added TVs.
Was that a miss upon opening, or was that something that you realized after the fact, like, oh, people want TVs? Or was the intention not to have TVs and have people talking to each other?
The intention was to have people talking to each other, but most people wanted TVs when they came in. We didn't have anything non-alcoholic when we opened. We didn't have sodas in the fridge, so we added sodas. We just bought from the store, Gatorade, stuff like that. Just didn't think about it. We should have, but now we have those. So it was just kind of getting into that rhythm and finding, you know, what people wanted.
Do you feel like 6 months in that you're in a rhythm now?
I think so, yeah.
How long did it take to get there?
Probably 4 months.
4 months?
Yeah.
So that's really, really new to you then.
Yeah. And we keep adding new things. So anytime it gets comfortable. So 2 months ago, we added distribution. We started distributing kegs to local restaurants. And so that's just one more thing. So anytime I get comfortable, I try and add something new.
Yeah. So let's talk about how a brewery grows, right? Because I'm sure many listeners have been to one of their local breweries and they think of the beer they're having right there. There is a scaling cap that can take place in a physical location, but you brought up distribution.
Mm.
Is that how a brewery really grows to that next level?
It depends on the breweries. I know breweries that don't distribute and do great. It's more their business plan. For us, definitely distribution. We want to be in local restaurants. Tasting rooms are great. So if you decide that you want to keep adding tasting rooms, there's breweries that go that route. I guess the limiting factor would always be the size of your equipment. You can only make as much beer as your equipment will allow you.
But there's also only so much volume of people to come through the doors of your location, San Dimas, right?
Right, that's true.
So there's only so many people that can come through the door. So then it becomes, I would assume the question is, well, how much beer can I get outside of my doors? Because there's your other revenue opportunity.
Right.
And I don't know what the laws are for selling online. I don't even know if that's, is that an opportunity?
It's an opportunity, yeah.
Okay, so you can sell alcohol online.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done that.
It's changed recently.
Oh, that's not true. I bought wine online, so I didn't know you could buy alcohol online.
I think Amazon sells liquor online now.
Amazon does?
Yeah,
Amazon
that
sells
was
everything.
Part of when they bought Whole Foods. I think that's part of why they bought Whole Foods.
Interesting. That's not true. I bought sangria online on Amazon. So yeah, I guess you can.
Yeah.
So it's just funny the things you don't think of.
No, definitely. And honestly, it's something I had never thought about us doing, but I know a couple breweries that do. And so right now we do kegs to local restaurants, stuff you'll find on tap. We're starting to add canning.
Okay.
And so we'll do cans to local liquor stores and that route. So yeah, that's definitely a great way for us to get our name out there without actually looking at like a secondary location or something along those lines.
Is there a big craft beer maker that you look to as kind of a model mentor that you kind of want to walk their path a little bit? Because you see that that's where I want to get to.
Yeah, there's a couple different ones.
Who?
When I started brewing, it was probably Stone and Port and Lost Abbey are the same brewery.
Mm-hmm.
But those two guys down in San Diego, I would drive down to San Diego to get craft beer because there were no craft breweries around us. And now every city has its own craft brewery. So Rogue up north.
And what is it that they're doing that you want to be doing at some point? I mean, besides the fact that Stone's opening up its own hotel, I mean, that's next level. I don't think any other brewery can pull that off but them right now. So
I like Rogue. Rogue has their own farms. They grow everything on premise. If you ever go to their farms, it's in outside of Portland, south of Portland, you can go to their tasting room. It's a shack. It doesn't look like any brewery I've ever been to, but you'll have beers there where everything that goes into the beer, you can see from that little tasting room.
Wow.
The hops,
cool.
The grain. I have like a jalapeno beer there. They have a little garden with vegetables and that was fun. I like that. I like knowing where everything comes from, how it all comes together and knowing that it's fresh, knowing that it's right. But those are all breweries. Port and Lost Abbey and Pizza Port are still doing okay, but I feel like Stone is almost getting a little forgotten. Rogue definitely, because beer is changing so much.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's trendier breweries that are more popular, definitely.
So do you think by staying small, and this is an interesting growth conversation and strategy, do you think staying small that allows you to adapt to how beer is changing faster than like the big ones?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. Like when I think of Stone in the retail space, it's the same beers all the time.
Mm-hmm. But I think that they've put those beers out there and they are huge because they did that. That was their whole motto in the beginning, was that they were only to make those whatever 10 beers they have.
Yeah.
Now they make a ton of different beers and they've tried to change, but I think at this point they're kind of too big to follow, you know, like the hazy beer trend, different mm-hmm. beer every week trend. They kind of are who they are.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And I think, again, you know, I have never and will never drink Coors.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it is a bad thing, but I'm not. I mean, you know, they're doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people drink them and a lot of people love them.
Mm-hmm.
Not my gig, but obviously they have a fan base. And that's really like when I think of beers, it's about the loyalty and the fan, right? It's the brand. And that's really what you're building right now for yourself is that brand. So when people think of High Point Brewery,
mm-hmm.
whether it be retail, restaurant, or whatever, they know what they're getting and that consistency and that quality, right?
It's an interesting time in beer. I think that right now that's not as important.
What's not as important?
Brand recognition. Okay. I don't want to say quality because it's definitely quality is always something that's mm-hmm. very important. But I think there's a lot of people right now that are looking for a variety, looking for the next new hot thing. We got this beer coming from Vermont that I got shipped in fresh, and that makes it seem more special to them. And I think that's just kind of the trendiness of craft beer right now.
Interesting.
But I don't think that's going to last very long.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that's where the beer scene is right now.
Why do you think that won't last long? And the reason I asked that question is because, man, it's going to age me. But I remember when coffee shops on every corner, I thought that's not going to last long.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when bagel shops, that's not going to last long. Like there have been so many things that I thought were just a trend. It's like, that's not going to last long. And I was so wrong. So what is it about you as an insider in the beer industry? Why do you think that that's not going to last long?
I think people are going to continue to drink beer.
Oh, that's a given. That's a given.
I think that the trendiness of it. I remember my mom loving Zima because Zima came out and it was new. And I think it's kind of along that same line where I've had a Zima. They're not great.
No,
they were just something that everyone loved. And so I think that beer right now, everyone's kind of looking for that trendy beer. It's kind of a popular thing to like beer right now.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, the quality products are the ones that are going to stick around.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to do is just maintain a quality product rather than chase down some of these fads that are kind of happening.
As you're creating your different beers, are there a few that you are hoping and grooming to be your flagship beer? Are the ones that you put out in the restaurants, the ones that make retail?
There are, yeah.
And what are those?
So our Uncle's Red, it's one of my favorite beers we make. It's one of my first recipes.
Okay.
Not one of those first three. But no, I've been making that one forever and kind of tailoring that recipe. I love reds. I love the different palate that it suits.
Okay.
You know, you have malts, you have hops, you have kind of a little bit of everything in there. Our IPAs, the Tom Down IPA, the Bad Kitty IPA. I love those beers and I want our flagship beers to be ones that I would go into a bar and order.
Yeah.
Rather than a beer that is maybe something we make a pumpkin beer. Our pumpkin beer is fantastic. But if I had to make that beer year round, I don't think I'd have fun brewing it all year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How much of what you do in owning a brewery is the making of a product versus some type of expression of you, right? Because there's been a few things you said where it's, I want a beer that I would order at the bar. Want a beer that I can drink regularly. Like how much of beer making is an extension of you mm-hmm. versus just the product?
For me, I feel like it's all an extension of myself.
Yeah.
I think what attracted me to brewing is it's kind of a combination of art, science, engineering. It lets me express all of my creative talents. So any beer we put out, even if it's a beer that is not necessarily a beer I would normally drink, our blonde, for example. I don't normally care for blondes, but if you taste our blonde, I enjoy it. It's definitely got a little bit of my own personality in there. It's a little hoppier than most blondes. It's more of a style that I would drink.
Okay.
I always say, I just want to brew beer.
Yeah.
That's maybe 5% of the job.
Yeah.
I wish it was more. The other 95% is cleaning, marketing, meetings, all of those things. And those things don't always let me express myself the way I want to or do what I want to do.
Yeah.
But it's all part of it.
Yeah. So now that you're in it for 6 months, your challenges now are different than your challenges before. Because before it was about getting the doors open and mm-hmm. learning learning the things you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now at 6 months, what are the challenges?
Sustainable growth. It's always what we talk about right now is we got the doors open. How do we grow? How do we grow at a rate that we don't outgrow ourselves?
What does that mean in brewery? A rate you outgrow yourselves?
We buy too big of a building. We expand too quickly. We take out a loan that we can't afford. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that we have enough money coming in, but we keep putting it back into the brewery rather than taking it back out ourselves?
Yeah. What for you as an engineer, you're a planner. So I know you have an answer to this question.
I'm sure you got that already.
Yeah. So what does High Point Brewery look like in 3 years?
I would hope that we are double in size in some local liquor stores, in the local restaurants, really more part of the community. I would love to be a part of the community. I want to be able to give back to the police department, the fire department, to the city itself. I want to feel like we are a part of the city, and not even the city, but the entire surrounding area.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. So there's two questions as our time comes to an end. There's two questions that I ask every founder. The first one is, it's about reflection and gratitude. I believe if we forget the people that helped contribute to where we are today, then we'll begin to think we did this all on our own, and that will inevitably lead to your failure because you're going to isolate yourself. And so when you think back along your journey from childhood all the way to now, who are the people you look back to with immense gratitude for their contribution in your journey? However, even if it was just for a season and they're no longer in your life, who do you look back to for what they contributed and what did they contribute?
I mean, it's the easy answer, but the first one's my parents. Yeah. And I think about that all the time. They gave me the foundation that I needed, definitely. And my family, they're always supportive. Everyone there is always supportive. But I've had a lot of really good mentors. Even in the engineering community, some of my teachers. It's weird to say that engineering translates to business or brewing, but it does. I mean, business is business. So those people that have taught me those life lessons, taught me how to work hard, taught me what it means to take pride in what you do, those people are always important to me.
That's awesome. And the last question that I ask is, this podcast, and really any podcast, is a digital mentor. It's a chance to just gain perspective from someone who's farther down the road. And while your first entrepreneurial gig with High Point Brewery has only been open for 6 months, but you had the lead up time to it. So your entrepreneurial journey is, you know, we'll say 2 years. That is still farther than some people. And there are some people right now that are working that 9 to 5 that have a bunch of dreams and ideas, but maybe there's some reluctance to start something. Or maybe there's entrepreneurs that have been punched in the gut from challenges and trials, whether it be health related, like reoccurring, frequent, very strong migraines, or even more drastic cancer, but it's sidelined them. And now they're starting to wonder if entrepreneurship is for them. You know, this is where I want you to speak to just one listener. And I don't care which of those listeners it is. Mm-hmm. If you were to speak to one of those listeners, what do you say to that one?
For me, in entrepreneurship, it has to be something that you're passionate about. You have to be driven by passion. I don't think it's ever something that's going to be easy. It's not something that's ever going to be given to you. It's kind of you against the world when you decide to do it, and you have to have something driving you. So you have to make sure that that's something that you're willing to put your all into. You have to make sure that's what you want. You have to make sure you're committed to see it all the way through the end.
Chad's final words at the end there are quite possibly one of the best parts of the startup story process. There's so much vanity built around entrepreneurship, and it's created this false perception that entrepreneurship is an easy journey. We hear these stories of brands and products being built and sold for millions of dollars within a short period of time, and the media makes it sound so easy. Now, don't get me wrong, those are amazing stories, but they're not the norm, and therefore should not be the narrative that consumes 99% of our attention. Entrepreneurship is hard, but that is also what makes it so rewarding. Regardless of what brand, product, or service you want to bring to market, it is going to present some incredible challenges for you. But those challenges will also create opportunities of learning and growth for you. And on the other side of those challenges, it's so incredibly rewarding. I hope you found real value in Chad's journey and his willingness to share with us. If you have been around the startup story for any length of time, then you know how much emphasis I put on the idea that entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. One of the most important ways we can support our featured founders is to help them be discovered. For that reason, I hope you will follow High Point Brewing Company on all the social media channels, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find them at High Point Brew Co. And that's H-I-G-H-P-O-I-N-T Brew Co. Time and time again, we hear from our founders how hard it is to raise their message above all the noise out there on social media. So I hope you'll take 30 seconds to follow them on your favorite social channel and help raise awareness for this great small business. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs, so let's make sure to show up for Chad and High Point Brewing Company. Now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible with sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We are a startup, and the most powerful way you can support the Startup Story podcast is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at thestartupstory.co. Share the Startup Story on your social media, either with a link or a screenshot. Make sure you tag or mention us at thestartupstory.co so we can see your help and say thank you for it. And lastly, share the podcast on your LinkedIn profile. The Startup Story is for entrepreneurs, so please do not underestimate the power of sharing the Startup Story on your LinkedIn profile so other entrepreneurs can discover us. In fact, most people struggle to share good content on LinkedIn anyways, so if you want to support the Startup Story, then search for the Startup Story company page, follow us, and share our posts to help encourage other founders and spread the word about the podcast. Every single founder has a story, and the startup stories we bring to you every week can encourage and inspire another founder. It might just be what they needed to hear to keep moving forward on their dreams. I look forward to sharing these stories every Tuesday with hopes to inspire you to start your story.